Well, what do you picture when you think about yoga? We're talking about this brand new anthology titled Yoga and Body Image. There are 25 personal stories about how yoga is a tool for radical body love. And the book challenges that image that you may have of the young, skinny, and white spandex-clad models that we usually see on the covers of those yoga magazines. But right now, we're joined by the two editors of Yoga and Body Image, Melanie Klein and Anna Guest Jelly. And Melanie's right here with us in studio. She's a writer, speaker, and associate faculty member at Santa Monica College, teaching sociology and women's studies. Welcome back to Feminist Magazine, Melanie.
Thank you for having me, Lynn and Tika. It's wonderful to be here.
And on the line, we've got Melanie's co-editor and also one of the contributors. First off, Anna Guest Jelly is the founder of Curvy Yoga. It's a training and inspiration portal for people of all shapes and sizes. And also on the line is a contributor to the Yoga and Body Image Collection, Chelsea Jackson. And she's a postdoctoral fellow at Emory, where her research is focused on the ways marginalized youth use yoga as a tool for resistance and healing. And her online community is called Chelsea Loves Yoga. So we have Curvy Yoga and Chelsea Loves Yoga. Welcome both to Feminist Magazine.
Thank you.
Whoa, you rehearsed that. Well, we're going to get started with the big question. Melanie, tell us, how can yoga be feminist? What was the connection for you?
Well, I came to feminism back in 1994 when I was taking classes locally here at LA Valley College. And I always say that the experience of coming into feminist consciousness was a radical awakening. And I think many women, of course, have that experience when they're exposed to feminist ideology and praxis, where you begin to look at the world in a brand new way, right? All of the dismantling that happens, all of the perhaps blinders that we've had literally peel away the layers, and we begin to see the systematic and structural forces at work. Well, a couple of years after coming into my feminist consciousness, I came into yoga practice, and I found it was a very similar experience where feminism had given me the sort of ideological grounding, and then yoga practice gave me the full body experience of, you know, it's one thing to understand the systems and structures of oppression.
Right.
It's another thing to come into your experience and begin to actually dissolve that internalized oppression. So they were really partners united in raising consciousness. And that for me was a very obvious connection between them.
That makes a lot of sense. Same for you, Anna. How did that come together for you?
Yeah, very similarly. I think feminism helped me to return myself to myself in the sense of all the ways that I'd been disconnected through oppression and systemic systems that are in place, and that yoga also returned me to myself in a very embodied way.
Right, so sort of the tool to put the action. So when I was reading the collection, there seemed to be two main themes. And the first one that a lot of the writers hit on was how yoga can be a tool for specifically for healing negative body image messages, especially those that limit and control girls and women. So how does that come up in the anthology, Melanie?
Well, when Anne and I got together, there weren't a lot of public conversations happening on this topic. There were definitely people doing this work in their local communities, but it wasn't until social media opened the yoga blogosphere that we were able to have this grander connection. And Anne and I were so excited to find each other because we sort of had the similar experience of having transformative experiences that really began to challenge literally experiences we had since childhood of being uncomfortable in our bodies, feeling disassociated with our bodies. But we felt very strongly that while we wanted our focus to be on those transformative elements, that we couldn't have that conversation authentically without simultaneously examining the unfolding yoga culture. So we wanted to be very clear that yoga practice and yoga culture are different and unique,
right,
and that in many ways very contradictory. So definitely there's that that next layer, which is the critique of yoga culture. At the same time, we wanted to focus on the fact that there are positive elements of the practice, and so we wanted to weave those together because they're very important, and you can't have one conversation without having the other
one.
Yeah,
exactly. And Chelsea, for you, how did you come into yoga and connect into those messages?
Sure. For me, yoga happened in two different ways. First, I approached it in a very physical way, and that was my experience. It was probably about 5 years later that I experienced a life-changing event that involved the death of my best friend. And it really helped me. I used it as a tool to really heal from the trauma. And not just the trauma of these isolated events, but even the trauma that I experienced as a Black woman moving through this country. And so I felt that yoga was a space for me to be able to reconnect with places within myself that I was even afraid of that were results of the trauma that I experienced moving through this world. So yoga came to me in two different ways, both physically and then on a deeper level.
And let's talk a little bit more about that and explain to our listeners. I think they may have the idea that yoga is just all about the poses, right? And you're talking about it, you might think of it as exercise or physical fitness or weight loss. But let's talk a little bit about how yoga is holistic and the different levels and how that's sort of each of you have, if we can hear from each of you, how each of you have experienced that and then connected it really to the work you're doing in the world. We'll start with you, Melanie.
There's actually, before I even get into my personal answer, I just also want to point out that's one of the challenges in the complexities of having a conversation about yoga mm-hmm. today is that there are not only stereotypes about who practices yoga, there are stereotypes about the yoga body, and then there are simultaneously stereotypes about yoga.
Right.
And in our culture, there's definitely this image that yoga is a physical practice that is based on postures or asanas. And the reality is that that is the smallest component of the practice. Mm-hmm. The practice is an inner experience, and the poses from the lineage that I'm a part of are just a practical challenge to our own sense of awareness. Can we reconnect to our body's own wisdom when we are feeling stressed or challenged or tired and honor that message from our body and then either take a break or modify? It's not about getting into the pose, but it's how we approach the pose,
right,
which is really, right, how do we approach life? How do we approach the challenges and experiences that we have mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis? And so, it's really kind of, it's ironic that you have this huge stereotype because you can't see what's happening inside. So people really glom onto, you know, the sort of physical expression, which is really the minimal, mm-hmm. you know, experience, mm-hmm. hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. Anna, how about you?
For me, when I started practicing yoga, I was incredibly disconnected from my body after decades of dieting and always feeling like my life will finally kind of come together once I lose X amount of weight. And what I found through my yoga practice was that through my teachers asking me to really notice what's happening in your back foot in this pose, what's going on with your breath, that the physical gave me a doorway in to better knowing my own body. And it was from that I was able to go into more subtle levels of awareness of my body. So my breath, and then what was I feeling, and then What was I thinking? What was going on in my mind? And all of that started to help me be able to shift the messages around my body, which as a feminist, I knew I was had so many messed up messages from society. But yoga really kind of helped me figure out for me in my own body, what does that mean and how can I change it? Not just the belief piece that I was getting from feminism. It really took kind of bringing that all together for me to really get it on a deep level and be able to live it.
Right. And so that's really implementing what you're understanding on a mental level.
Right, exactly.
Chelsea, how about you?
Yeah, similar to Melanie and Anna, I noticed that yoga was really helping me as a lens to really understand the world and then later begin to critique the world. So it was like I was having these lived experiences as specifically talking in the context of me being a Black woman arriving to a yoga class or a yoga studio. So being in these spaces where I was, on the one hand, getting to know myself a lot better, I was also in this this struggle of understanding who I was in this space where I didn't see my image reflected. So that's when the activism through yoga started to become alive within myself. So yoga was really used, again, as a framework for me in ways that in my physical body, if I'm going through a pose and being very aware, as Anna said, just very present with the breath and just maintaining also an integrity within my body. So being honest with what my limits were, where I wanted to push the edge. And so I started to then take that off of the mat and move it through the world so that I could start to understand what it was that I was experiencing throughout my lived experiences.
Right.
Yeah, I think a lot about the dualisms. Susan Bordeaux has written about this, for example, about, you know, the mind-body split that we call it in our communities, but how the intellect has been gendered masculine and the body has been gendered feminine. And there has been, you know, literally a decades-old pattern of, you know, taming the feminine, the wild, the, you know, the unconstrained, and how I noticed for myself that I had never really listened to my body because I felt it wasn't worth listening to and that I was always approaching my body from a place of how can it be modified, manipulated, how can it be changed, why isn't it listening to what I want, and having this sense of my will should prevail over what actually was good for my body. And it was in the practice where I remember the first time in decades, you know, looking up at my legs in a shoulder stand and thinking, oh, wow, I'm looking at my legs and I'm not criticizing them. That is when I started to notice the tangible shift of, you know, sort of projecting my own expectations to just accepting the reality of where I was. And that was a really great aha moment where those worlds had come together. And as we've been saying, that the yoga was the practice, it was the embodiment of those, you know, intellectual teachings that we had been.
Right. It's really looking at what the body can do, and it's pretty damn amazing, the many things we can do, versus the body as ornament, which are all these messages that we get. And we seem to get them, I think, where when a lot of the stories in the book had this, when I was a kid, I was playing sports, I was dancing, I was doing all these things with my body, and then this shift happened, and I sort of disconnected that consciousness from my body.
And that was actually something, the story you were just relating actually came from Alanis Morissette's conversation with me. And for her, I remember it was a really intense conversation where she said, I remember being a young girl and she was very athletic. She played a lot of sports, and how she was very much connected to her body, living inside of her body, owning her body, experiencing her body. And then as she moved into this, you know, media spotlight, it was really taking ownership away from her as someone being embodied. And it was about what she looked like and all of these expectations projected onto her. And I think that, you know, we chose these particular stories because it's not just her story. There are stories that we can find pieces of ourselves in all of these experiences.
And that is a very universal story. She also had what I thought was a very moving and important message, talking about how she got the message at that point that she couldn't trust herself. She couldn't trust what her own body needed or wanted, even in terms of what she was eating. And she called that the most dangerous message of all. And I think that that disconnecting from trusting your own messages seems to be a big part of what yoga reconnects us to.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Anna, would you agree on that?
Yeah, definitely. I think we get so many messages of disconnection. So for me, as a curvy bodied woman, there, you know, everywhere I look, people are telling me your body is too big, you're taking up too much space, you have to lose weight. And that's also true in the yoga room where, like Chelsea was sharing, you can go in and feel like, whoa, I do not fit in this space. I'm not seeing anyone whose body is like mine. And I think that what yoga can do through the practice, that distinction Melanie was talking about between the culture and the practice, is to say, okay, here's all this disconnection. Now yoga, here's a way for you to reconnect.
Right. And perfect segue brings us to the other big theme in the book, talking about how the yoga community needs to become more conscious and take some action about its own limiting stereotypes and exclusions. And I love the many times that came up in the book. Chelsea, you're doing that directly right now. Let's talk a little bit about how you connect yoga to your social justice work and vice versa.
Sure. Well, I think a lot of times when we hear the term yoga or we imagine it, we see it as this refuge, this place, this sacred, safe space where we can kind of get away from all of the things that are thrown at us day to day, all of the isms, all of the marginalization, all of these things. And so I always like to, I like how bell hooks refers to these systems of oppression as these imperialist, white supremacist, capitalist, patriarchal systems that influence so many things, including a space where yoga can be practiced. So with that, the invisibility of a diverse range of people in the context of the people with whom I work specifically with young black girls who identify as such. They self-identify as black girls. And to just the power of allowing a space for them to share their stories in conjunction with becoming more aware of their bodies and becoming more in tune, and then also not using yoga as what I'm noticing a trend in schools lately and schools of mindfulness is this tool of calming the students in order for them to be calm enough to take a test. Instead, I see yoga as being a tool to interrogate these systems that are having imbalanced, you know, standardized testing, imbalanced opportunities for growth and communion with their school community. So all of that to say, you know, I see yoga as, of course, this space. I think Melanie said it really well when she spoke of in the introduction of the purpose of this book. It's transformative. Yoga for the body and the mind, but it would not be complete if we didn't mention that culture of yoga. And so within the United States in particular, we cannot remove yoga from being a part of this system. So just the very visibility of different people practicing yoga to hear their experiences, that in itself is political, you know, resistance of any system of oppression.
Exactly.
And that's what, you know, why Anna and I were very, very particular about who we chose for the book. And obviously, I think from Chelsea's answer, it's very clear why we want to have her particular voice. And every voice in the book really speaks to these truths that are necessary. And you know, yoga as a practice is actually very subversive, incredibly subversive, because it is literally taking all the outside cultural noise and you're trying to remove it to really come into your own authentic sense of being. And unfortunately, what we found in yoga culture, and I know Chelsea and Anna and I have many conversations about this, is a lot of times yogis, and I use that term very loosely, are very happy to talk about, you know, let's say food politics and, you know, and environmental rights and things of that nature. But they are willing to throw sexism, racism, misogyny, transphobia and homophobia under the bus. And so one of the things that all three of us are very committed to is having those conversations. Because as Chelsea pointed out, it's about coming to that consciousness, not to be calm and leave it up to the universe. It's about coming into that authentic truth and speaking up. And it's not about being judgmental, as oftentimes, you know, intellectual yogis are sort of, you know, said, oh, you're being judgmental. You're not being very yogic. It's like, no, we're actually being incredibly yogic because we have raised our consciousness and we're speaking from that place of truth. And so, Chelsea and her community, you know, does that work. And that's what Anna's been doing for years as well, is bringing to light, right, you know, curvy bodies and making safe spaces and representing, you know, again, those other populations that we don't see at all.
That's doing the work.
Yeah.
And we're talking to Melanie Klein, Anna Guest Jelly, and Chelsea Jackson, all from the anthology Yoga and Body Image. So tell us, there are about 25 contributors to the anthology, including, as we talked about, musician Alanis Morissette and a couple of internationally recognized yoga instructors. But tell us about one or two of the other contributors we may not yet have heard of.
Anna, do you want to mention a couple?
Sure, yeah. We have such a wonderful group of contributors. Marianne Elliott has a wonderful piece about shame on the yoga mat and a time that she really felt shamed during a yoga class, which I think is also something that we don't talk about, of course, because shame is often something that we kind of keep in the dark. And she talks about the ways that she was able to process that and come back to her yoga practice through some embodiment in yoga and really think about the ways that she could become a yoga teacher who doesn't or tries her best not to bring shame into the practice. And we also have a great story from Rosie Molinari, who talks about her story, and she's the author of several great books, including a book about self-acceptance and body acceptance. And she talks about her experience as a Latina woman and same, you know, process some of us have been talking about, which is how does she come back to herself through yoga and through the lens of how she's seen in U.S. culture.
I want to add one other story. I mean, obviously, anytime we've had people oftentimes ask us to choose our favorites. And of course, Anna and I are always like, it's like choosing your favorite child because they're all wonderful. But I want to mention Sean Korn's article. What I love about Sean Korn really emerged as one of the first yoga celebrities, if you will, back in the late 90s. She's been on numerous magazine covers. And what is so wonderful about her is she talks about the fact that she was not chosen because she was the most talented yogi, but because she fit within the parameters of the larger cultural expectations about what a woman should look like. And she was young and thin and white and straight. And she said, you know, I became very aware of my privilege. And what is so great about her work is she not only owns up to that, but then she uses her platform to elevate the voices of others. And simultaneously, she talks about not only being a cover model chosen because of what she looked like, not necessarily how she taught, but also aging, approaching 50, and her stance on not being photoshopped and still oftentimes having that happen and, you know, really wanting to keep her authentic, you know, story through the way she is physically represented so that we can actually see women aging and not being, you know, being manipulated either surgically or digitally. And so that story is really important, I think, for, in terms of looking at ageism and power and privilege.
And you cover actually several other isms in the book. And I know that there are folks writing about from a trans perspective, from different abilities, all these many anthologies among the 25 great pieces here. Let's talk about one more thing that I know the three of you are all involved in, the Yoga and Body Coalition, which is sort of like the next step, right?
Yeah. The Yoga and Body Image Coalition, is we call it the action arm of the book. My co-founder, Gigi Yogini, is doing a lot of – had been doing a lot of body positive work. And we had been introduced last year. And when she found out about the book coming out and what Anna and I had been working on, she really wanted to come into community and help support the rollout of the book and collaborate more. And so we had decided on creating a coalition so that we would have an aggregated mass, which would allow the conversation to become larger. And that's exactly what's happened. And so Chelsea, Anna, and I are all part of that endeavor to then take the critical themes that emerge in the book and put them into action to begin to really shift the paradigm that we are critiquing in the book.
Taking the action. So where can folks actually get copies of the book? Where can they find out more information about the book? Anna, give us that info.
People can visit our website, which is yogaandbodyimage.com to get more information. We have a great sneak peek of the book, so people can kind of read a pretty lengthy snippet of the book itself right there on the website, read more about our contributors. And then people can buy the book online, most major places that you can buy books online. Ask your local bookstore or library to pick it up. We know that we've been hearing from people who've been finding it in those places too, which is exciting.
Fantastic. And that website again is yogaandbodyimage.com. So Chelsea, tell us what your website is. I know we're going to go around and just get everybody's websites here, and we will have them all listed on our website. So many. But in case, okay, in case anyone's driving, we don't want them to stop and do anything dangerous, you can find all of these links. But go ahead and just tell us where folks can find out more about you and your work.
Right. It's ChelseaLovesYoga.com.
Fantastic. And Anna, yours is?
CurvyYoga.com.
And Melanie?
And then the coalition is YBICoalition.com. And all of us are linked there as well, so all of our bios. So you can find us in a number of places. Chelsea and our contributors are also at yogaandbodyimage.com. So we're kind of populating the internet in a variety of places.
And Instagram and Twitter and
yes,
everywhere.
Yes.
All right. So we've been talking to the editors of Yoga and Body Image, the new anthology. Editors Melanie Klein and Anna Guest Jelly, and contributor Chelsea Jackson. And we thank you all so much for being here today.
Thank you for having
us. This is inspiring me
thank
to get
you.
Back on the mat.
Yes.
All right.
We hope everyone is inspired. And if anyone wants to get involved, they can contact us. We're definitely all about community and collaboration.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
After the break, we hear Step Up Women's Network about mentoring teen girls and Songs in the Key of Choice, all about the messages that pop songs are sending about reproductive health issues. Stay tuned.